Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
And tell us a little bit about your involvement with Auction Napa Valley. That's another, you know, very prominent event that's known worldwide. That's probably the most prominent charity.
It's an incredible, it's the one of the best things the Napa Valley Vintners puts on. So this started, we're celebrating our 75th anniversary of the Vintners. So what the heck auction was this? I can't even remember. So Auction Napa Valley started in, it started in 81. Mm-hmm. And it was a small amount of vintners that really, it was Bob Mondavi and Robin Lale and a couple other people that came up with this idea that mm-hmm. we needed to raise money for the community. I ended up, once I came home from New York, being on the board of directors for the Vintners early on, and then getting involved in auction as a volunteer for years. And then it was 1992 that I chaired the auction.
What an honor.
Michael Mondavi chaired it in 91. And 92 was the first year it made over $1 million. And so it was a real, that was wonderful.
Yeah.
And then, let me see. Then I've chaired it three times. First as myself, then mm-hmm. a second time was when all of the past chairs of the Auction Napa Valley, I think that was 2000.
Oh, cool.
We all came back together and mm-hmm. chaired that auction. And then this year, all the past presidents chaired Auction Napa Valley, which was a whole different bailiwick, because you think of this group and there's a lot of people with hearing aids. And I say that so lovingly. It would be the war of the hearing aids when we'd have these meetings. And there was, this year was a little tougher because we were all brought out of, I'd say, you know, off the shelves, and the dust was taken off, and with the idea that the auction was going to change a lot. And mm-hmm. it turned out that there were a lot of feelings that it shouldn't change very much. And the biggest change was having Katy Perry there. So
that was really interesting. So whose idea was that?
We wanted to have somebody stellar.
Okay.
And it just so happens that that Dick Grace's son, Mark, his husband, is Katy Perry's manager.
Well, how convenient.
And Robin Lale, God bless her, is really good friends with the Graces, and as I see, they're my next door neighbors.
Yeah.
And Mark made it happen. That's Mark so Grace cool. made it happen. So
yeah.
it was wonderful. But as a whole, the Vintners, I don't know exact amount, but we've for children of Napa Valley, for housing, healthcare, there's no child in Napa Valley that doesn't have adequate health care, and it's all because of Auction Napa Valley and the generosity that people have brought that have come to the auction. And a lot of those are vintners, but the vintners have also given so much too.
Yeah,
we throw a great party.
Now, it really is a go-to if you want to put together a phenomenal charity event. People always look up to, even, you know, when I travel across the country, even worldwide, they know of the event.
Well, especially you that travel so much and so many great events, too.
Yeah, no, it's amazing how much it sort of is a reference point for people, too. They're so attached to it, even though some of them have never been, but they've heard of it. So it has international fame.
And it's good we've split it up enough so that people can come to the barrel auction and be part of
yes.
it without having to go and spend thousands of dollars at
yeah,
the auction
absolutely.
Itself.
It's more accessible than people realize, and
absolutely.
Such, you know, the energy is unreal.
It is. You're exhausted for a week afterwards. yes, it's really good, and you know, so many of my clients today, that's why they joined the Napa Valley Vintners,
yeah.
is to be a part of Auction Napa Valley. And then they find out that that Napa Valley Vintners has so much more to offer other than just Napa, just the auction.
So I heard you say Clyde's. We'll get to that later on because, you know, I started in the introduction to say that sort of like in the commercial, you know, the Marines accomplish more by noon than the rest of the country does all year. So that's what leaps to mind. There's so many different things that you've achieved.
I just like to stay busy.
Clearly.
Just stay busy.
Clearly.
So after Mandavi, I had the great, well, while I was at Mandavi, I had a great offer from one of the original partners of Chalon Wine Group, which I always admired. I always admired Chalon and Navalli. And it was to run their Sonoma Carmenere Winery, which is at the top of Moon Mountain. And I jumped at that because, I sort of could go full circle to where my father started. And Sonoma's always been, as I think I said earlier, I'm the proud godmother of Katie Murphy from Alexander Valley's Sons. I've always spent a lot of time in Sonoma. And so I jumped Napa Valley ship and went over the mountain. And that was an eye-opener because at the time, Sonoma, they could basically shoot you down as you came over the valley hill. I was still a Napan. I was somebody from Napa Valley, and that was not really looked at very kindly, as well as I was working with a large corporation, and it's not really that large. Chalon wasn't that large, but we were trying to build a winery in Sonoma, and so it was very political. But I did love being at the top of the mountain and met one of the most fabulous people in my life named Phil Couturi.
Oh, he's a legend.
That is someone you need to interview. He is the most fabulous person. Looks like he should be part of the Grateful Dead. And basically has been, not in the band, but grew up with most of those guys. He taught me all I know about organic farming, biodynamic farming. Again, taught me what I loved about that property was those vineyards. And he knew everything about every inch of those vineyards. And he was a gem, a total gem. I was there about two years and had the opportunity to come back to Napa Valley and run Oakville Ranch for a good friend of mine, Mary Miner, who has property at the very top of the mountain in Oakville above Dolla Valley. So it's the highest point in Oakville and still be in the Oakville wine appellation. So when you were up at Ovid, you look straight down on Oakville Ranch.
Got it.
Mary's husband was co-founder of Oracle with Larry Ellison. And one of the last things Bob Miner did was buy this property. And he bought it because it had vineyards on it, but it also had two tennis courts on it, and that's what he loved. Mary was is British, and the last thing she wanted to be coming is to Napa Valley. She loves being in the city.
Yeah.
And he passed away of lung cancer and never smoked at all, and left this to his wife, who took it on with a vengeance. So she in turn would know where every hole was in those fences in that vineyard. So when I started there, that land looked like it had been nuked. It was sort of old Italian farming, not to say that was bad, but just everything's, there's not a weed in place. And it was time to get a new vineyard manager. And we interviewed everyone. Most of these guys here I grew up with, I love, and I threw Phil in very last moment, and Mary chose Phil.
Wow.
So I then had really the opportunity to work with Phil, and that was sort of his start of spending more time in Napa Valley. So those grapes went from $6,000 a ton to now $13,000 a ton, maybe more now since I'm sure. And now he has Mayacama, so many other vineyards that he works with in Napa Valley. Mm-hmm. But it was great.
Yeah, he's famed viticulturist.
Yeah, he's just, and now I think is growing cannabis like crazy and trying to figure out how to get that more, I don't know.
Mainstream?
More mainstream in Sonoma County. I don't know. Everybody assumes that, that he's more involved, has been more involved than he has. And that this is a lot, this whole new, is a new venture for him too.
Yeah.
Nancy Duckhorn is one of my best friends. Nancy and Karen Cakebread and all of us have climbed so many mountains around the world for breast cancer, which we need to talk about. But
without
Nancy has had a great consulting business when her and her late husband had Pine Ridge, and when they sold that, she started her consulting business, and she always said to me, "You need to do this." And I was very petrified to do that. And it just came a time that it was perfect opportunity to sort of take that step off the porch. And so it's been about 6 years ago I started my consulting business. And it's gone from basically sales and marketing to now it's sales and marketing, but more general business. Mm-hmm. It's really sort of opening doors and trying to teach people where the bodies are buried and not to do the same mistakes others have. And
so it's marketing and branding, I would imagine. And what else? What other services do you have?
Sales of helping them set up a distributor network within the United States. Sort of explaining the three-tier system, because a lot of small wineries want to do just direct-to-consumer.
Of course.
But ultimately, they have to have, or they will need to have, some distributor outlet out there. So be it small, large or small.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is just being a sounding board and advice and general business. Now Napa County has so many regulations that it's really hard for everyone to keep up with, including myself.
So that's what occupies a large percentage of your time, is working closely with clients. And obviously the business is flourishing. I'm sure your expertise is very, very...
The business is really great, and I have great clients and have had great clients. So a lot of what I do is project-based.
Mm-hmm.
Some is ongoing. You know a couple of my clients, be it Tyler from Nelcote, who had basically a brand new brand.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyler brings a whole spark of joy to things that... Not only does he love great wine, but and art, and he's brought both to his wine.
Yes.
And loves to be out there to 1111, where another brand new brand
very
that
exciting.
Really is, every time I leave 11, we were doing a September birthday event on Friday, and I was telling the staff there, I said, "You guys, every time I drive out of here, I always have a smile on my face."
Aww.
Every single, that whole staff gives you hugs. You just feel like you're always part of the team. And they have an incredible a business where they're having other wineries crush at their facility, custom crush facility. So they're doing wonderfully.
I can tell you take so much heart in helping businesses succeed and flourish and, you know, really come into their own and define themselves in the marketplace, because the marketplace has changed dramatically, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's not easy out there.
Yeah.
There's no brand loyalty any longer. So
it
is really, you need to keep it going versus having something for everyone or trying to touch people in your own authentic way. And I don't like that word authentic because it's so overused, but it's got to be.
Yeah, no, but a story is a story. A good story is a good story. It's just telling it and really being invested full on, like being your own brand ambassador, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And when you have somebody like, let's use Tyler, how the hell do you come up with the name Nelcoat? And yet people walk up when I'm pouring that wine and say, is that the building? Is that the house that the Rolling Stones wrote Exile on Main in? And people know that because I had to learn that.
Yeah.
Or 1111, where I never knew that if you looked at your watch and it said 1111, you're supposed to make a wish, or it was something. I mean, I had nothing to do with their naming of their, but it's fascinating today how that comes around and then defining your brand through that.
Yeah. So if you were to be talking to a client and their small winery, you know, a dream realized, and they of course want to primarily interact with consumer, but there's that reality that they have to deal with the trade as well, and they're trying to find their voice. What is some of the top advice you give a business in that position?
Well, first of all, in all honesty, I would tell somebody they really need to think very hard if they want to go into this business. Mm-hmm. Because it starts, I think so many think it's going to be different for them, and then it can start out as this glamour project, and that they just want to make a small amount of wine, and then they realize that making a small amount of wine is very expensive, and that if they make a lot more wine, or not even a lot more, but if they make, they go from 200 cases to 500 cases, it's probably a little less expensive, but they have to sell those 500 cases. Mm-hmm. So it's really trying to get people to understand that it's selling wine to people other than your friends, and that there has to be a story out there, and you have to have a story that is believable, and you have to be able to be out there telling your own story. For me and my clients, I'm always telling them the story is not about me. They have to go. I can help them, and mm-hmm. I'm happy to go schluck a bag on the street and pour wine for people, but they need to be the ones that are out there, and it has to come from them.
So important. You can't outsource that.
You can't do it. It has to be personal, especially when these clients have their name on the bottle. You don't want me selling Zakin, me pushing Zakin, or me behind a table. Jan needs to be behind the table.
Yeah.
Which she does, but it's trying to explain that to people that you have to do that.
You have now observed Napa Valley for a number of decades. It kind of grew up in the last, really, 40, 50 years. I mean, if you start measuring from Mondavi times, it really is a pretty young valley.
Very much so.
And yet, intense, really intense trajectory. What are your thoughts and observations as you've watched this valley come into such popularity? It's a huge destination. It's both loved and sometimes
not loved
and considered the snooty, you know, expensive destination. So what are your thoughts on all of that?
I think Napa Valley has to be careful. Napa Valley works very hard at trying to reach many people and diversifying. You get him. It's garbage night here at Chateau Drool.
Yes,
you can hear the garbage go by. We face the traffic here in Napa Valley is over the top. People can't afford to live here, so it's terribly difficult to find employees.
Labor issues.
So it is, that is one thing. And we have to remember not to forget who our consumer is, and that there are, yes, those people that are buying $225 bottles of wine, but are they, there's a lot that are not. And don't forget that. We can't, we have to remember that, excuse me.
As we have,
just falls over me.
We have an amazing dog that
yes,
is
hello,
very much in love with his mama.
But I think, and then of course, the ever-ending question, or the ever-large looming question about climate change. And where we keep saying that, well, is Napa Valley still going to be a place that can grow great Cabernet? And I believe it can be, and it can continue to be. But we have to be cognizant of that. And I think the Valley is very cognizant of that. I just think that, in general, we have to be looking at it. I fear the prices of our wines are just over the top.
And yet, where does one go, considering the labor cost, considering the land cost? It's such a difficult dilemma.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's
no easy answers there.
Yes, because the wines are expensive. And when you look at, I think back to your question about what do you say to people that are coming in, there's know what your costs are, because most people have no idea what their true costs are in that bottle.
Yes, absolutely. And it's legitimate. I mean, it's just what happens when success happens, and, you know, there's so much intent and there's so much refinement in the viticultural areas that honestly, that it costs money. Research costs money, labor costs money, you know, it's just reality. So we're a blue chip region.
We are. The other night, I couldn't sleep. I was saying this to my walking group this morning. The other night, I couldn't sleep. I have never seen an episode of The Kardashians. And it just so happened that the show that I turn on is a trip on their private plane to Napa Valley.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was so interesting to me because I'm just watching all this sort of craziness, and of course it would go back to Los Angeles, and I guess that's how they do their script. But I'm watching how they're holding the glass, or they're talking about the Valley, and I thought, oh boy, we still have lots of education to do. So when we think we're saying too much and educating people too much, boy, we're not doing it enough. And I just thought, okay, that is, I know there are those people that love them, but it was interesting. I thought, is this really what we want? Is giving our message out there? And they need to be educated.
Yeah. And I think it's people like you that's probably very good candidates to be those teachers.
I don't know about that.
No, I mean, you have a terrific demeanor. You're so warm. You're so welcoming.
But that was so funny.
But yet you have that knowledge and you have all that depth.
Well, you want to spread the gospel around.
Yeah, absolutely.
You believe in it so much.
Yeah, and the thing that I think bothers me the most when I travel and things come up about Napa is that they think that, you know, everybody is very territorial here. And it's actually quite the opposite, isn't it?
Yes.
It's very communal. That has not changed from the times that you were describing.
It's bigger. It's
growing up.
Other than that, it's a shame that when, for instance, when in February, when we did the general meeting for the Vintners, there it is. There we are.
A microphone situation. Yeah.
When we did the general meeting for the Vintners, and we were talking about how'd that go? I totally lost my train of thought. What the heck happened?
In terms of the communal spirit.
Getting up there in front of all of these vintners, and all of us, all the old timers on the stage, we looked at each other and go, who are these people that we were talking to? So there were so many new vintners, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
We just don't know who they are.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's fabulous. We just don't we just don't know their names, where
yeah.
at auction, let's say in 1992, when I'm staying there, if you could look around and go, God, I know most of these everyone. People, or I have an idea of who they are.
Yeah, no, understood. How many members?
Oh, it's over wineries. 600.
600, isn't that amazing?
Vintners, and that's not, those are bonded, that are members of the Napa Valley Vintners.
Wow. It's grown yeah. exponentially, really.
It's amazing.
Yeah, Napa is really quite a special spot. For you to have seen it in so many different iterations and some tragic and, you know, quite, disheartening in some ways, you know, when there's a reality of the banks and people that and regulatory bodies that don't always understand all the moving parts, and they have their own agendas. There's that side, and there's of course the communal, the conviviality, the connection between the people. That's quite an interesting dynamic. It must have been just extraordinary to have such investment in it all these years.
It was a great way to grow up. It's a great way.
Yeah.
I think our joke always is that you spend half of your life trying to get out of Napa Valley, and then you spend the other part of your life trying to get back in. So.
That's fantastic.
It's all good.
That's totally quotable. Good. We put a pin in something earlier about the breast cancer awareness. That's obviously a cause that's very near and dear to your heart.
So a very good friend of ours, Elaine Mackey. Elaine was one of the previous to Linda Reef, the president of the Napa Valley Vintners. Mm-hmm. Elaine was our president for, I believe, 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. And she came down from Oregon and was one of the first people that helped corral all these vintners. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately passed away of breast cancer at a very young age of, I think it was 30-something. It was very, very young. And we were all very good friends of hers, and we were trying to figure out how we could raise money for this trust that we started called mm-hmm. the Elaine Mackey Charitable Trust. Mm-hmm. And Karen Cakebread and Nancy Duckhorn and I were talking about a trip to Nepal. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden the light went on, and we went, we could probably raise money doing this trek. Mm-hmm. And so Nepal was the first of, seven treks maybe, that we always paid for our trip. But if you wanted to get a t-shirt, it was $60. And if you want, it was $100. And if you wanted to be on the t-shirt, it was $1,000. Mm-hmm. And so we started sending letters out to everybody who ever asked us for a donation, every distributor. So the first trip was Karen Cakebread, who was still at Cakebread. Karen was married to a Cakebread at the time. Nancy, myself, Katie Murphy from Alexander Valley Vineyards, Lindsay Harrison, who had Harrison Vineyards mm-hmm. at the time. There were six of us. And Polly Ogden, who was a contractor here in Napa Valley. Mm-hmm. So we went on our first trip to Nepal and was just below base camp and absolutely loved it and raised, $70,000. And we were shocked. We thought we'd raise maybe $20,000, and everyone gave money. And then so that made us go, we need to get something higher. So the next 2 years later, we did Kilimanjaro.
Wow.
And Janice Madabi from Charles Krug joined us. So we've had Holly Peterson, who was married to Tim Madabi for a period of time. But Holly's a great chef and mm-hmm. makes chocolate in Calistoga. So various people have come and gone. But first trip was Nepal. Second trip, Kilimanjaro. Third trip was Turkey, the Karkash Mountains in Turkey. Fourth was Peru, Mongolia. Where am I forgetting? Turkey, Peru, Mongolia, India. I'm forgetting something in there. But we've had some great treks and raised quite a bit of money over those. So each one was for breast cancer. So we ended up doing sort of a kit, so that if you were diagnosed with cancer, really any cancer in Napa Valley, that was a kit on who to find, a resource guide that who would, wow, who to find, you know, how to get a wig, how to do this, where to go, what to do. So it was very, it was extraordinary. Really heartwarming.
Yes,
really
it is.
Heartwarming.
Wow.
Fantastic. And at that point, breast cancer was crazy in Marin County, and it was the highest in Northern California, Marin County. Now it's Napa County.
Really?
Yeah. So it's changed drastically. That is, unfortunately.
Just, yeah, no, it just, I don't, there's no rhyme or reason, I guess. Yeah. It just happens in its own weird patterns.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you. What a great contribution. Anybody, you know, that had been touched by it, and most of us has, we know somebody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, these days and age, you just, it's, it really has touched so many people.
Yeah. Wow. So we come to my favorite subject, which is wine. In addition to everything else, you have accomplished and continuously doing so. You decided to also get into the wine business.
Yeah, and I continually go, is this a good decision? What the heck am I doing?
If you were your own client, you probably would have cautioned yourself.
I'm my own worst client, let me tell you. When Hans Cornell was going under,
yeah,
the bank put a gentleman in named Pat Roney into Hans Cornell to make sure that there was a business plan. And that was, again, in 1991 or two.
Mm-hmm.
So Pat and I have remained friends all these years. And we get together quite often. And so a couple of years ago when he came and said, we have a hole in our portfolio that is a sparkling wine.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone down this path with a couple of other place people. And what it did was make me get some trademarks. Anyway, I said yes. And so it, just because I've known him for so long,
there's
and
trust there.
Him.
Trust you.
And knew that there was an organization that could, that I could work with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a wild ride of the last 2 years of trying to put this all together and to really sit down and figure out what it is that, if I were to do a sparkling brand, what would it taste like? What do I want it to look like?
Yeah.
And so it's, as I said earlier, you're one of the first to get to taste it. And,
what an honor. Delicious, by the way.
Thank you.
Seriously.
The labels were just printed yesterday. And so it is called Paula Cornell Sparkling Wine.
Mm-hmm.
And Napa is coming out first, which is entirely Carneros fruit. Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, and then later on in the year or the beginning of next year, there will be Paula Cornell sparkling wine from a Brut from California.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be a $20-$22 price range, and this is around $50.
So much fun was it to make sparkling wine after all these years when you
it
first
is
got into
great.
It.
You know, I have to say, I always signed every letter with sparkles for years and years and years. And then after the winery closed, I stopped. It wasn't by design. I just stopped.
Yeah.
And the day after I had this lunch with Pat and I said I would do this, I started signing things with sparkles again.
Aww.
So it really is wonderful to go full circle. And I hope, as everybody says, what do you think your parents would be saying? And I hope that they would be proud. I think they would. You know, it's carrying it on.
There's such serendipity to this. I have no doubt that both your parents would be amazingly proud. I mean, immensely so. You're such a delight in so many ways. I've run into Paula for a number of years at various happenstances during wine events, and there's always a smile on your face. There's so much goodwill coming from you. You know, when I first met you, I felt like I already knew you.
Well, thank you.
And I know there's so many that benefited from that.
Well, I felt I knew you just because I know how great you have been with Thank so you. Many of my clients and friends, too, Thank and have you. Been a true supporter of Napa Valley.
Yes, no, I love Napa with a passion, and it's people like you that make it so easy to love, besides the geography and how wonderful it is in so many ways, and the wines, obviously, are spectacular, world-class, and all of that, it's true, but the true spirit of Napa is folks like you, that you just exhibit it with everything that you are. So I couldn't be happier that we now can participate in it through purchasing a sparkling wine, and we can get those sparkles into
exactly,
our lives.
Exactly, exactly, by all means.
Yes, it's absolutely delicious. I understand it's going to be available at Gary's in case you're in Napa Valley. Very exciting development, Gary's Wine Shop, where formerly Dina DeLuca used to reside, and they'll be carrying your wine. But I'm sure that there's an online presence as well.
There will be.
Okay.
There will be.
There will be.
It's a whole nother
so stay
step.
Stay tuned. this is such a delight, and I really appreciate you telling the story that has so much depth and so much love, and it's truly mimicking an extraordinary life experience by any measure, and it's been a pleasure sitting down and sharing this with you.
Thank you, and a pleasure for me also.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.